Charming Pot.
Hello, my darklings, and welcome back to the Charmed Pot. The Charmed Pot is brought to you by Shellhawk's Creations, Halloween ceramics, and other needful things. Handmade by little old me, my Halloween ceramics are just what you need in your home during the best holiday of the year. Remember to head over to my Etsy store during September and October for some great new ceramics and the old favorites like my Raku Fire Jack-o'-lanterns. Etsy.com/shop/Shellhawk's Creations. I've made Halloween nostalgia part and parcel of the Charmed Pot over the years, from those old costumes we wore as kids to the old records we devoured. One thing I never covered were the old cartoons we used to watch, so that's the subject we'll explore today. To start, I don't think you can truly appreciate our spooky Saturday morning cartoons without going back about 83 years to the first scary cartoon. In that time, people used to dress up and go to the movies to see their cartoons, as the television wasn't yet a household item. To my knowledge, the oldest Halloween cartoon is Disney's Silly Symphony, The Skeleton Dance, which came out in 1929 and featured, for a brief moment, what may have been a forerunner of the beloved character of Pluto the dog. For the time period, I'd imagine that The Skeleton Dance was pretty spooky for little kids. After all, it took place in a graveyard, with black cats and a skeletal dance troupe who removed their own heads and played music on their own ribs. As scary as it may have been, it was soon joined by other spooky cartoons made by Disney and quickly followed by the other studios. Many of the Silly Symphony films were animated by Dutchman Ub Iwerks, who was the creator of Mickey Mouse. Iwerks eventually left the studio due to Walt Disney's draconian methods of dealing with his animators. He moved on to working for MGM Studios, where he animated Spooks, featuring Flip the Frog in his own dark and scary night adventure. In an innovative move, Disney animators changed their usual presentation of Mickey Mouse with their animated short, Haunted House. Instead of moving immediately into music and dancing as they had with his previous appearances, Disney took the time to build up a spooky atmosphere with an ingenious use of sound and animation. Different sounds punctuate the action taking place on the screen as Mickey is driven by a rainstorm to the only house in which he can take shelter. Unlike the rest of his films, no orchestrated music starts until later in the cartoon, when Mickey is forced to play music for the skeleton's dancing pleasure. The use of light and shadow in this film was revolutionary for the time, and it still looks impressive today. Other characters of the day were soon seen running from their own specters. Fleischer Studios incorporated one of their best-known characters, Betty Boop, into a couple of spooky shorts. One, called Maxwell DeMille Presents the Halloween Scary Show, starred music legend Cab Calloway conducting his orchestra. This is my first personal recollection of Calloway singing his signature song, Minnie the Moocher, which he later performed in the 1980 film The Blues Brothers. That song was incorporated into Betty's adventure with her companion, Bimbo, and began with a live-action segment of Calloway grooving with his orchestra. It segued into a longer animated segment, with Calloway voicing the main ghosts Boop ran across, and his orchestra voicing the background skeletons and ghosts. In watching the film, it's almost certain they use live footage of Calloway's dance moves as a model for the walrus-like ghost's groovy dances. In 1934, our buddy, Ub Iwerks, created the first animated version of The Headless Horseman, adapted from The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. Every year brought more spooky-themed cartoons produced by different studios. The Headless Horseman was followed by Scrappy's Ghost Story and The Cobweb Hotel. Then, in 1945, Casper the Friendly Ghost stepped out of the pages of a children's book and onto the screen. Casper made sporadic appearances in film and eventually made the transition to comic books, where he was seen through the 1980s. It wasn't until 1963, when televisions were in numerous households, that Casper was seen in made-for-TV cartoons, which ran continuously until the mid-90s. Although not a primarily Halloween or spook-themed cartoon, The Bugs Bunny Show, along with many of the Warner Brothers characters, would visit the darker side from time to time. Witch Hazel was a character who became the butt of that wascally Wabbit's jokes many times, and another of other Universal monster-themed characters came along to scare up a good time for the Saturday morning cartoon crowd.
Such an interesting monster, too. My stars, if an interesting monster can't have an interesting hairdo, then I don't know what things are coming to.
I feel these cartoons in particular reflected the more adult-themed monster mania which had been happening in the 50s and 60s, and brought that mania to children in a fun, less scary package. Frankenstein-like monsters, or Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, would do their best to outwit Bugs or his pals, but somehow could never manage to do so. 1969 arrived, and Hanna-Barbera rolled out a new twist on that scary Saturday morning cartoon, the now iconic show, Scooby-Doo, Where Are You?
Scooby-Dooby-Doo, where are you? We got some work to do now.
Hanna-Barbera originally pitched Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? To CBS as a scary mystery show, light on the humor, but heavy on the monsters and spooks. Scoobert was a very minor character, and the four teens, Wilma, Daphne, Fred, and Shaggy, were the main players. Mysteries 5, or Who's Scared, as it was originally to be called, was determined to be too scary for kids, but Fred Silverman, then head of children's programming, still wanted to work with the idea. As he sat at home listening to Frank Sinatra sing Strangers in the Night, he got the idea to change Scoobert's name to Scooby-Doo, make him the main character, and change the show into a comedy. He was certain this change of formula would create a hit, and of course, he turned out to have cracked that case wide open. Scooby and the famous Four Meddling Kids formed Mysteries, Inc., and drove all over in their mystery machine. They went to theme parks, abandoned mines, haunted houses and ghost towns, searching for ghosts to bust, monsters to unmask, and mysteries to solve. They seldom found any real monsters, instead unmasking greedy men and women trying to scare people off for their own personal gain.
Would have been mine if it hadn't been for those meddling kids.
Scooby's show morphed into a second incarnation, the new Scooby-Doo movies, in which well-known actors such as Don Knotts or Phyllis Diller would make cameo appearances. The Harlem Globetrotters, then at a height of their popularity, even loaned their skills to the Mystery Inc. team for 3 episodes. Scrappy-Doo, Scooby's nephew, arrived in 1979 and is the reason I stopped watching the show. He was just too annoying for me. With the arrival of Scrappy, the rest of the team, with the exception of Shaggy, was retired, at least temporarily. They were now the stars of the Scooby and Scrappy-Doo show, in which only Shaggy tagged along as the human sidekick. Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Was so successful that the studios did exactly what they continue to do today. They went to their writers and asked, "Could you write another show just like this one, only not like this one?" And a number of Scooby-like imitations were spawned. The Funky Phantom, starring a Revolutionary War ghost and his snickering cat, came along and introduced Skip, Augie, April, and their bulldog Elmo.
We were cold and soaking wet and lost out in a storm. We went inside a spooky house just hoping to get warm.
The cat and dog had their little spats, of course, and equally predictably, the team would debunk monster and ghost stories with every episode. Goober and the Ghost Chasers were next up, featuring a slacker dog who wore a knitted cap and who would turn invisible when scared. The show ran for 16 episodes, 8 of which guest starred several members of the Partridge Family. Unlike Scooby-Doo, the Ghost Chasers were a group dedicated to getting real pictures and footage of ghosts. They often failed, as ghosts aren't known for being terribly cooperative, and also because many of the sightings were fake. In a slightly different take on the popular monster theme, the Groovy Ghoulies cartoon combined music, child-friendly monster jokes, stories, and the education of the young monster or mad scientist-to-be.
Everybody shout! Come on now, sing out! It's time for the Ghoulies get together!
Each episode had 2 musical numbers played by the residents of Horrible Hall. They were Drac on keyboards, Frankie on drums, and a sandal-wearing hippie Wolfie on guitar. Each episode had a similar layout to the popular show Laugh-In, with one-liners and riddles, bedtime stories, and home movies, and it ran from 1970 to 1972. With the success of the Ghostbusters movie in the 80s, a Ghostbusters cartoon was spawned, and a Beetlejuice cartoon wasn't far behind. Even Godzilla had his own Saturday morning cartoon for a while. It seems that as time goes by, there are still monster kids out there who want to see their favorite creatures in living color. There's no doubt many of you listening to my voice today started to love Halloween and monsters because of these wonderful cartoons. And I'll bet you probably still catch a few of those when you can, even now. I'm glad you joined me for this episode of the Charmed Pot, kiddies. Bloody kisses!
And that's all, folks.
I'm going now. Heaven help you.
Please like and follow the podcast. Stalk us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Links in the description. And help us by sharing Hauntcast with all your haunt and Halloween brethren. Until next time, stay safe.